The Magnificent Seven are not just dominating the US share market, they are dominating the global share market. And despite a bit of a setback right now, are they set to grow further? Are they getting too big to fail? Well, you know, Tesla accepted, perhaps. This week, what's the future for the Magnificent Seven, or the very least, the Super Six? We read the tea leaves. Well, actually, a bit more of a technical evaluation than that, with Katie Stockton this week.
The Morning Call from NAB with Phil Dobby.
The Weekend Edition.
And as always, the disclaimer that the views you hear on the Weekend Edition don't necessarily reflect the views or recommendations from NAB. We cast our net a bit wider to get more opinions over the weekend. So, Tesla's share price year to date down 28%. Apple year to date down almost 8%. But Microsoft shares, well, they're up 7% year to date. Amazon up 21%. Alphabet up 20%. Meta up over 26%. Nvidia up over 75% year to date. And most of these companies are now paying a dividend. Too good to be true? Well, Katie Stockton is a regular commentator in the United States. She's founder and managing partner of Fairlead Strategies. I mean, Katie, surely anybody would be looking at 75% growth in 4 months and saying, well, that can't last. They'd be getting nervous when they see growth like that. Are you getting nervous?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm nervous. I actually think it's very good momentum, and we want to respect that behind NVIDIA for one. And it's a proper long-term uptrend, and our metrics still do point higher, even though it's in corrective mode as we speak. But what I will say is that while the mega caps have collectively done very well, I guess, excluding Tesla and Apple year to date, they've exhibited upside leadership in an market environment that has better breadth. So we have to differentiate between leadership and breadth, and that breadth is showing the participation, right? So while the mega caps are outperforming and they're setting a good example for the rest of them, we still actually have had very good participation among individual stocks in the uptrends that we have, of course, in the major indices, which are very heavily weighted towards these mega caps. So that breadth is something that tends to contribute to the sustainability of a long-term uptrend.
Right. But you talk about momentum. I mean, NVIDIA has really, I mean, relatively recently seen this huge spurt forwards. Before that, nowhere near as much growth. So, you know, at what point do you say, well, this is momentum rather than this is just a short-term gain?
Right. So with trending, we have these trend-following indicators. One of them is called the Moving Average Convergence Divergence Indicator. It's probably one of the most popular technical analysis tools out there. And its design is to measure price trends and their momentum. And it does so with a way that it eliminates noise. So moving averages are generally designed to smooth out the noise of these prevailing trends. So this indicator does just that. And on a long-term basis, NVIDIA captured positive momentum based on this moving average convergence divergence, or MACD indicator, about a year ago, just over a year ago. And it still has that long-term upside momentum. So if you want to be very simplistic in how you're approaching the chart of NVIDIA, you'd say, well, I want to make sure that I have that long-term momentum metric on my side and my positioning. So it would warrant a bullish bias. If you are more sensitive to shorter term price swings, you would then say, well, I know that long-term momentum is to the upside. However, we've seen a loss of short to intermediate term momentum. And then it becomes not even necessarily a technical decision, but more of a portfolio management or risk management decision as to whether you want to reduce exposure in light of the loss of short term momentum to avoid some kind of pullback or corrective phase. So it's a matter of sort of reconciling the various timeframes. If you're a long-term investor, you may not honestly care too much about a 10% downdraft in an individual stock, right? Because you're still trying to be mindful of these long-term trends.
Right, but you might be concerned about the way Tesla's been going this year and not much momentum going on there. So do we take them out of the Magnificent Seven? Do we just talk about the, what is it, the Super Six, I think is the term now, isn't it? Is that...
I know. I can't keep up on these things, but I think it's astute to say that Tesla really is no longer... clearly a mega cap stock along with the rest. It's as it stands, the last reading I show in the S&P 500, it's about 12th in its ranking in terms of the footprint for the S&P 500. In contrast, so if Tesla is, let's say, about 1.2% of the weighting, Microsoft, being the largest component, is about 6.8% of the weighting. So it's kind of fallen down in the ranks with the downtrend that we have in Tesla. But of course, we still have Microsoft, Apple, Nvidia, Amazon, Alphabet, Meta. And then the runner-up there would be Berkshire Hathaway. So we have still these really dominant players, which lean towards the technology sector, of course. But Tesla's still relevant. I mean, it's something that a lot of people care about, and it reflects the consumer in part. And it's something that I think is you know, reasonably on people's radars.
Yeah, well, I mean, people are still going to be driving electric cars, aren't they? And there's still, you know, a cutoff in many parts of the world to move to electric cars. I mean, less so in America, but in other parts of the world, there's that drive.
That's right. So electric vehicles, AI, clean energy, these are all thematic, investments, right? So people tend, even if they're not involved in Tesla, I think they care a lot about what it's doing from a fundamental perspective.
So if you're worried that the Magnificent Seven, or the Super Six, as we're now going to talk about, if you're worried, you know, that it was growing too much and there's too much money being put into it by everybody in just a few companies, you'd be thinking, well, that's going to create enormous volatility, having so much money going into such a small number. And so, you know, I'm going to broaden my portfolio. I'm going to go more into, less into those stocks and more into value stocks. I mean, you would have lost out, wouldn't you, over the last year? But yeah. is that a logical way forward from here?
Well, you know, we did see that breadth improve as of Q4 last year. So you would have lost out for sure for much of 2023. 2023 was a year in which that was a major issue, that the mega cap, it was not just narrow leadership, it was also narrow breadth for most of the year up until Q4. And that's when you saw equal weight benchmarks. We use RSP, which is an ETF representing the equal weighted version of the S&P 500. So it'll be far less mega cap heavy in the way it trades. And you'll see that RSP ETF, for one, has been trending really very nicely higher since bottoming late last year. So it's improved. However, as it's gone higher and participated, right, in this uptrend up until recently when everything pulled back, it has not garnered relative performance in a meaningful way. So we've seen equal weighted and small cap benchmarks underperform mostly this year to date versus the large cap benchmarks. And that is because the mega caps have exhibited that leadership. So it's still an issue, but it's not as big an issue as it was in 2023 in terms of the impact on folks' portfolios. They can still feel good about being invested in these other areas of the market because they're leveraging that market participation having broadened.
And how important is size in these companies? They're obviously performing really well. And you talk about leadership. They've obviously got great ideas. These are innovative companies that are driving the agenda. But is size a lot to do with it as well? I mean, they've all got market caps over a trillion, or, you know, treble that if you're talking about Microsoft and Apple. So, you know, it's obviously a lot easier to put your money into one big company rather than doing a lot of exploratory work to find others with high growth potential.
That's right.
Is there a bit of a, you know, too big to fail element going on here?
You know, they benefit from what I would consider like a pylon effect, right? Because they're going to be the major components of a lot of ETFs, for example, that are actively traded. And therein, their market cap just, you know, gets enhanced, I feel like, by some of these trending moves. I think investors are rewarded by holding stocks that are in long-term uptrends in general. And of course, the mega caps are certainly a source of those long-term uptrends. And then they can source other areas of the market for either turnarounds, so stocks that have turned the corner from a long-term perspective. So you can't say they're in long-term uptrends, but they've gone from downtrending to now something either that looks like a basing phase or an emerging uptrend. or, you know, something that's higher beta and just has a little bit more room, right, to the resistance level, albeit with higher risk. So we love, you know, long-term uptrends, of which many of the mega caps are just that. But we also like supplementing a portfolio in a stronger tape with stocks that have turnarounds underway to leverage counter trend moves in higher beta areas of the market. So there is opportunity elsewhere, and sometimes it's actually bigger opportunity, but that comes from more of a top down perspective, because the high beta complex, you know, these are more highly volatile names, both on the upside and downside. When the market's in a corrective mode, of course, they will underperform. So you have to be more careful with them and make sure that you're on the right side of the broader market. And that's where I think the charts add a lot of value. We spend the most of our time really focused on the major indices and sector work, and a little less time sourcing individual stocks for ideas, because those top-down views will trickle into our individual stock recommendation.
And you talked about, you know, the major themes that are driving this, but I mean, there's one, isn't there? I mean, AI is obviously the biggie. I mean, do you worry that it's overvalued? I mean, you might. I mean, I'm looking at your photograph. You're clearly too young to remember the 2000 dot-com bomb. I was in the thick of it. And, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people say, oh, my God, is this another one? But where we've been sold a lot of promises, yet to see the full revenue potential coming out of it all. It's going to change the world. But what if it doesn't?
Right. You know, I don't feel it's overdone in the same way that things were in 2000. And I did actually live through that period. And I lived through it in San Francisco, California, where it was especially prevalent in our day-to-day.
You're leading a better life than I am, then, clearly, Katie.
It was fun until it wasn't. But the market at this time does not have characteristics of a bubble in really any way, especially for the fact that because the participation wasn't too broad in 2023, a lot of these higher beta technology stocks, you know, take cloud computing stocks as one, you know, they're really just coming out of trading ranges, right? So they're far from the parabolic, super steep uptrends that we were accustomed to in the late 90s. I remember just day after day, you'd come into the office and there'd be another 2, 3, 4% gain from these high-flying technology stocks. And by no means do we have that. I mean, we had in NVIDIA, which of course is really the AI sort of proxy, we had a very consistent up move up until April. But before that, we had a trading range for close to 6 months. And now, of course, we've entered a corrective phase. So it really, as much as it's a steep up move that preceded the corrective phase, it is stair-stepping higher. And that's something that's more sustainable, as you could imagine, versus something that just goes parabolic. So it is something that looks more sustainable to me. If we were to see it accelerate and really never look back, well, that would be another problem. If you look at something like a Supermicrocomputer, which is the ticker SMCI, that was an example of a move that pretty much went parabolic, right? You saw it go from, you know, sub 300 up to north of 1200 in the matter of maybe 2 to 3 months, which is really obviously very explosive. And of course, that's just not sustainable, right? So if we saw more action along the lines of that super micro move, then I'd be more concerned.
So what do you think is driving the correction now? And is it going to last long? I mean, has the Fed got something to do with this? I mean, it's sort of stands to reason, although, you know, these companies have got their own money, so they're not having to borrow it, but longer interest rates or higher interest rates for longer from the Fed, is that playing a part? There's obviously less confidence in the economy. Is that all part of this correction?
I would say yields certainly are a driving force behind it. We call it almost like a macro technical force, right? We've had yields working their way higher, and now they're at a level that all of a sudden we remember 5% for 10-year yields here in the U.S. So I do think yields are affecting, you know, market sentiment as they reapproach these higher levels. And also, I would say NVIDIA is influencing market sentiment in that if it pulls back for a day, you feel the angst that creates, because it is such a heavyweight and it does reflect the bullish positioning that's been the driving force of the uptrend. So those are two things that we feel like are influencing the market sentiment. From a technical perspective, we're more about the what versus the why. And we have ways to measure market sentiment through volatility metrics like the CBOE Volatility Index. And then we have another one called the Fear and Greed Index that incorporates volatility, among other metrics that are transactional, to measure whether investors are positioned in a more bullish way or a more bearish way. And it tells us if they're getting a little bit greedy, perhaps, or fearful. And for a lot of this year, we've seen an extremely greedy type of metric from our sentiment measures. And that's not something that's usually sustainable indefinitely. So with the pullback that unfolded in April in the U.S., we saw the sentiment start to fall from that extremely greedy territory. And as much as that is a driving force, it's healthy. And it's healthy from a contrarian perspective that when we finally get a corrective low, we would expect for sentiment to feel a bit more fearful when we get that tradable low, and we have ways to measure that.
Right. So, unless it's getting hugely complicated, in which case you'll lose me in the first sentence. How are you measuring greed? What's the measure there?
Well, the volatility index, or VIX, is inversely correlated to the S&P 500, and it's measuring the premiums behind put and call options for the S&P 500. So, essentially trying to measure whether investors are getting hedged or not. And they would get hedged if they're feeling more nervous and drive up premiums, right?
So it's looking at the VIX index is what you
said. Well, the VIX is one. And then the Fear and Greed Index, it's offered on CNNmoney.com. So it's something that anyone can access. And it incorporates the VIX among other metrics like junk bond demand. It has some breadth metrics in there. It looks at the price of gold. Gold, of course, being perceived as something that's a bit more defensive or lesser correlated to the equity market.
Mm. While we're talking about gold, what about Bitcoin? Do you treat that in the same way with the same fundamentals that you look at equities? I mean, you can't, obviously, because there's not the same value. How do you assess it?
As a sort of a risk appetite measure, I think Bitcoin is certainly that. It has a nice uptrend in place that was initiated at the beginning of 2023 after what was a bear market cycle for cryptocurrencies for the better part of a year. So we have an uptrend in place, and within that context, a correction has unfolded. And Bitcoin, consider it to be high beta, higher risk, but also potentially higher reward with that. So when it declines, you tend to see it underperform equities and vice versa. I think 2023 was a perfect example of that, where the outperformance by Bitcoin versus equities was really remarkable. So now we have this pullback underway, and we're seeing that in a way as a risk metric for the equity market, meaning that if Bitcoin is pulling back, it probably shows a little bit of a contraction in risk appetite more broadly, and that would take a toll first on equities overall. So Bitcoin can be used as a bit of a risk metric or input for the equity market. And then, of course, from a technical perspective, there's opportunity here eventually, right? We want to make sure that we're staying on the right side of the prevailing long-term trend, which is higher for Bitcoin. We saw a recent breakout to a new high, which we see as a bullish long-term catalyst. So we'll be interested, just like with equities, in buying Bitcoin and other altcoins.
Everything you're doing is being driven by technicals. So you're not looking at the macro picture at all, because your sense is that it's going to show up somewhere. There's no need to worry about that. Just stick with the technicals. That's your approach.
I do worry about it just by the nature of reading, macro strategist work. And it is something that's on our mind. But it won't drive our decision-making process necessarily. We're really driven by the technicals. We feel that a systematic approach to technical analysis from a top-down perspective is really the way to go, because it will help keep you on the right side of the trend and help you to limit drawdowns. We have an ETF called the Fairlead Tactical Sector ETF, and that's exactly our goal, is to limit the drawdowns while participating in the best sectors on the upside. And we do that through systematic technical analysis, looking at metrics that measure momentum, overbought, oversold readings, relative performance, things of that nature. And it's highly possible. Where we do feel it's important to have a fundamental input, meaning know your company's financials when you're investing from a bottom-up perspective. So if you're really a stock picker, well, then technical analysis, it really isn't sufficient as a standalone discipline. You need to have that fundamental input to, you know, really succeed, in my opinion, long term in bottom up investing. We're able to certainly come up with individual stock ideas, but we make sure that people know that they're coming from the charts, right? Not a look at the balance sheet.
Well, let's finish on one point, which is a very broad point, actually, but it's relevant to people listening from outside the US, which is most of our audience. Most of them are in Australia, of course. People are buying US shares more than ever before. In fact, the US accounts for 60% of the global stock market. I mean, it has been higher in the 60s. It was higher. It's been a lot lower. It was around 25% when Japan was doing particularly well. But is there a danger of success bias, almost, particularly, you know, if we've got this AI-led bias going on, that people are buying into AI-driven stocks in the US because that's what everyone's piling into. And so they do that, and then all that money, that foreign money, flows into the US. The Fed goes, hang on a second, interest rates are going to stay higher for longer. The US dollar rises. All of a sudden, everyone goes, oh, well, we've got the risk of the stocks, but we've also got the risk of the currency as well. And they start dipping out of the market. There's a doomsday scenario for you to finish with, Katie.
Well, we'll finish off on a down note, I guess. But no, you know, the US has been a source of long-term outperformance globally. It's not a new phenomenon, not something even associated with AI. It's a multi-year, if not longer, phenomenon. So if you look at things like the US versus developed global and or versus emerging markets, you'll see the trends do favor the US over the long term. So I don't think that's going to change. I don't know if it has to do with the maturity of the market or simply the successes that it's seen, you know, exacerbating itself. But when we do see that foreign outflow, I would trust it to be temporary. It could certainly exacerbate a corrective phase or even contribute to the next bear market cycle, which we don't think is imminent here in the US. But the US obviously has very good opportunity, right, from a technology perspective, and here also from a technical perspective longer term. Thankfully, we do have good breadth, as mentioned, and that breadth is not just limited to the US. It's limited to, or it's broadened to global equity markets. So we have a breakout even in FTSE 100 index. So these are, and that's a long-term laggard globally. So the breakouts are occurring around the world, which we see as a positive.
Well, look, you know, and the thing is, there's only one Apple, there's only one Microsoft, there's only one Amazon, there's only one Alphabet. There's going to be multiple competitors to Tesla, but all the others, they all just happen to be in the States, don't they? So if you want to buy their shares, that's where they are.
That's right.
But great to talk, Katie. Some fantastic insights.
You as well.
You know, hopefully we'll get you on again soon.
Thank you. Great. Thank you.
There we are. Katie Stockton from Fairlead Strategies. Great to get her perspective from Connecticut in the United States. And next week, closer to home, what's gone wrong with Australian productivity? Can we really keep inflation down without seeing productivity recovering? And how much of it is an Aussie issue? It seems like there's lots of countries around the world are talking about the same problem. Have we got it worse than them? We deep dive on all of that next week on the Weekend Edition. But we are back, of course, talking markets Monday morning. Join me for that. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. Thanks for listening.
The Weekend Edition.